Blog Talk Radio.
A junkie walking through the twilight. I'm on my way home. I left 3 days ago, but no one seems to know I'm gone. A bad idea if I never went home again. Stand as far away from me as you can and ask me why. Hang on to your rosy beat, close your eyes to watch me die. Kick it, quit it, kick it, quit it. God, but did you ever try to turn your sick soul inside out so that the world, so that the world can watch you die?
You're listening to No Covers on Blog Talk Radio, 858-947-6607 to call in and talk to the host. I am Daoud El-Amin. This is No Covers on Blog Talk Radio, coming to you live out of the Port City of Wilmington, North Carolina. We're back on the air again. This is our second week on the air after the new year. We said January we'll be back on Tuesday nights and Thursday nights at 8 o'clock. We're going to try to keep that schedule as long as our health allows and as weather permits. We're going to be here. You can call in each week, different subject. Our main focus as we got this year is the black male, the crisis in 2013. We're going to discuss that tonight. The lines are open. I see we have callers on the air already. If you want to call in, press 1 and talk, because I'm going to have to step out. And y'all know I'm very open on this air. I got a probation officer coming by, hopefully in a minute, to see me, because I'm one of those ones that's captive here in 2013. So I'm going to be back and forth. If I have to go to a commercial break, I will put on Michelle Alexander, let you catch some of that up, and come back and continue the show. I got a two-hour show here. I got paid for 2 hours worth of time, so I'll be here back and forth. I'm going to be here every Tuesday and Thursday. You're welcome to join in, to be a part of this movement, because that's exactly what it is. No Covers is a movement to try to eliminate some of the issues and deal with some of the problems we have concerning not only black men, but black men are our focus, but the black community as a whole, our people. So what about, I had an email this morning from a good white friend. He kind of tell me about the other allies. The other allies we have is fine, but I'm not an expert in that. I'm sorry. The crisis right now is my community. The time is in my community. The situation that's prevalent for me, that's just for me personally. It's for me, it's black people, and especially black men. I got too many of them going to jail. I was just leaving a class tonight at Link Incorporated. I just finished doing a two-hour session with a group of young men and coming to the air, and some of them may come on tonight because I told them to tune in because I was going to continue that conversation that we're having about black males. If you go to No Covers, I want to deal with that picture that I keep putting up on No Covers of the black male. It is the black men on one side and the in slavery, and then on the other side, there's the picture of the jail cell. And every time I teach that class on the picture, I get more and more information brought to my own attention, having created the picture. You know, every time I teach it, I look at it more, and I delve into it more. On the left side of that picture, if you go to my Facebook page, it's 1555 slavery. That's 400 years of free labor that America has. In the middle of the picture is a line in the middle. And I found a new way to describe that line. The middle of the picture is what I call now inflation. The left side of the picture, right side of the picture, is the jail cells with the black men on it. I call that America's new slave labor. Simple as that. America went into inflation because for 100 years now, she has no free labor. And since she has no free labor, on the right side of that picture, she's producing herself another group of people that she can enslave. And she's doing so. Michelle Alexander has made it clear in her book, The New Jim Crow, she's made it clear that she's enslaving them at an enormous rate. An enormous rate. I mean, it's a rate that is on epidemic proportion. You know, every time you have an epidemic, that's a disease, right? You know, and that's the rate that she's enslaving them at. She's putting them away left and right as fast as she can. I think I'm going to play some Dick Gregory tonight also as you're tuning in because he has some interesting things. Dick Gregory's book, he talks about in his book, Nigger. If you haven't read Dick Gregory's book, Nigger, pull out some of those old books and dust them out because you're not getting too much information today from these new writers. These new writers are not old school writers. They're not there. They're not there. They're just not focused on the problem. Living in the problem every day is how you get to understand the problem facing this generation that we're dealing with today. We had a test tonight, and I see I got a couple calls on the avenue. We did the black male recognition test tonight. And the question is, can you name five black athletes or five black actors? They got that. Can you name five black lawyers? They might have that. Can you name five black entertainers? They got that. Five black basketball players? They got that. But when you start going to five black engineers, male, they don't have it. Five black doctors, male, they don't have it. Five black world leaders, male, they don't have it. And they are mad at themselves for not having it because they just haven't been taught it. So we went through class for a two-hour session. And to see young black men, the look on their face, when history is presented to them for the first time and they get excited, that is sign that we're not too far gone. The problem is, it's not enough resource to get this information out here at the rate that it has to get out here because false information is coming at them at such a fast rate. The information that we have is coming at a slow rate. So each one of us are duty bound there. See, a lot of us are sitting back. I am, you know, these radio, blog talk, radio shows, somebody made a comment on Facebook that it's too many of them. Damn it, ain't it? I said I wasn't cussing tonight. My wife told me I have to calm my voice down and stop using the right language. So I'm going to obey and obey my wife, and I'm not going to go there tonight. But doggone it, there's not enough of them. There's not enough. Because if I only get three callers on the air that can relay a message to one caller, it changes that caller's life. It's well worth the $39.95 that it costs me per month to keep this show on air. If one caller calls in and he says, brother, you told me something I never heard before. If one person emails the inbox and chimes in and says, I like the message that you're giving, that's well worth the $39.95 that it costs to keep the call in on every month. So I don't mind paying the $39.95, but if you want to go to nocovers.org and hit the donation button, I don't mind that either. But whether you donate or not, we're going to keep this show on the air because one person likes the information. If it takes one person to go back to their dictionary, back to their library, and pick up a book and read it and learn about Charles Drew, learn about Noble Drew Ali, Learn about Elijah McCoy. Learn about those great engineers that created, you know, I was telling the guys last night, Louis Latimer created the filament of the light bulb. Edison created the light bulb, but he had a problem. He had a paper filament, and it kept going out. So what's the creation of a light bulb if in 10 seconds it go out? It took a black man, Louis Latimer, to come along and say, you know what? If you put a carbon filament, you would change it. So it took him putting a carbon filament in there. Once he put the carbon filament in there, all of a sudden the light bulb stayed on. So tonight, when they heard about that, they blinked the lights out and cut them back on and knew that a black man, way back when, had created that instrument that now we see everywhere lit up, then it changes their paradigm on what they can do. See, they've been tricked. We went over tonight in the class the concept of an illusion. An illusion, the state definition, is the act of deceiving the state or fact of being intellectually deceived or misled. Our black males have been intellectually misled and deceived into believing they're not successful. Young man in the class tonight had produced two mixtapes, had went into the studio and produced two mixtapes, had a notebook full of lyrics that he's written on his own. But he didn't feel he's successful because he hadn't accomplished the wealth of this world. He is successful in all state and view. I'm going to turn you into Dick Gregory right quick, and I'll be right back after this commercial break.
But first, let me forget the intellectual stuff right now, which I love. And I've got to get down to some personal business, which you'll probably find out about after we leave here. I was standing back in the back waiting to come on when you had your sponsors out here. So when they came by, they passed me, and I did say something to them. And I know they're going to tell you. See, thank the white dude from Walmart for my cousin. This past Christmas, they had prices so low, he didn't have to shoplift. Now, I know they're going to tell you.
Yeah.
The brother that passed by from ExxonMobil, now a lot of people don't know, they had gift packages for us, you know, and they had an ExxonMobil credit card for gas.
Right.
I gave him mine back, because I said every time I go to Exxon and buy gas, I love water. A gallon of water costs more than a gallon of gas. Can you give me a water card?
Yeah.
The black brother from Wells Fargo, head of the mortgages, I pulled him over and said, I need to talk to you. He said, Brother Greg, you need a mortgage. I said, no, they took my house when times was good. Him,
yes, sir.
I asked for a loan and a cosigner to open up a black business. I want to open up a black airline named Tamika Air. And my motto will be, we leave late, but we get you there on time. White Airlines, we'll be the only one can say we guarantee we won't lose your luggage because you can't bring none with you. be a good Christian airline. We ain't selling no alcohol on the plane. You bring your own, we just sell the setup. That's right. So I just want to. That's all. Now, to my mayor, Mr. Mayor. I just want you to know how bad things are. When you said Chocolate City, I had just walked in the hotel room. I was in Europe and turned on the news, and I heard you say Chocolate City. I thought you was talking about Hershey, Pennsylvania. And then I heard all the white folk complaining about you call this town Hershey, Pennsylvania. Look, all my life, they've called this town Sin City, and nobody cares. Deceitful, nasty, ungodly, unspirited. When you said chocolate means love, kindness, tastes good, is good. So do colors matter? Let me tell you something. I had a dream last night. Now I'm 75 years old. I dreamed I saw God. Now, being 75, I said, excuse me, Mr. God. Can I have a word with you? He said, yes, my son. I said, you know, they just had a Polish pope. Will we ever get a black pope? He said, yes, my son, but not while I'm God. Son. And finally, let me say this. Thank you. Thank this movement. I'm not talking about the ones we know about. I'm talking about the ones we don't know about. Thank God there is a God that know all the names. And because of this movement, I didn't come up in a civil rights family. Didn't nobody teach me that. I thought everything was okay. I didn't get it at home. And when I heard it at home, I heard it from some ignorant part of view. It's these redneck, uneducated, pot-belly crackers that create the problem. And at 9 years old, I say, since when that type of white boy determined public policy? My problems with the president are hard. And Yale and MIT and the major corporations, until we leave this little daddy boy alone, we will never deal with it. And so again I say, where I am from this movement, it gave me a turtle philosophy after looking at that black woman I'm married to and being part of this movement. I am the turtle, hard on the outside, soft on the inside, and willing to stick your neck out. That's what it's about. Huh? That's what it's about. Huh? That's what it's about. And all of us in this movement, I'll come up as a black man thinking hard on the inside, hard on the outside, but I wasn't hard on nobody but black folks. And looking at my wife deal with 10 black children with softness, and I became soft, the inside. And finally, let me just say this. I'm tired of people talking about this election from the standpoint of fear. Fear and God do not occupy the same space. Listen. I don't want nobody to tell me and tell my grandchildren to go to the polls and vote against something. That's ungodly. With the beauty of this country and all the things we got to vote for, you don't have to tell me about Bush When I see him on TV, I say to my grandchildren, if he was alive, he'd be a sick man. But my mama was so busy teaching me about the devil, I'm a grown man before I found out the beauty of God. Huh? I don't need to talk about the filth. The filth speaks for itself. For itself. And I say thanks to the two most powerful folks in the history of America, the black woman and the black church.
I used to have a problem, and I don't know how many of you grew up watching the story of Moses. Every year my father would sit us down, and even though we were from, you know my background, you ought to know me, you ought to tune in to the show, know I grew up as Jehovah's Witness. And even though we were from a background of non-sectarian, we weren't part of this world and this society and grew up that way, we would participate in watching the Easter shows, the spiritual shows on TV. I think my father would get a kick out of pointing out the errors as we watched the shows. But as we watched the Ten Commandments, I remember clearly watching the Cecil B. DeMille's version of the Ten Commandments with Charles and Hester and Hugh Brenner. You've probably seen it. Every year we would watch it religiously. And every year I would have a problem. And I would ask the questions, but my father was one that you would ask questions, you couldn't seem to be questioning his faith. And so I was very selective on what questions I asked. But I had a problem every year at the end of the movie, because at the end of the movie, Moses goes up with Joshua, and he's taken up with Joshua to a mountain. And in that scene, Joshua is told by Moses that because of an incident during the travels some time ago, when he split the crag with water and told the Israelites, is it I that must bring you water out of the crag? Because he made a reference to himself and didn't give God the credit for splitting that crag, he was not to enter into the promised land. And I had a problem with that, because my mind was like, you know, after all Moses had been through, you know, after your brother, you know, especially you watching the emotional version, you know, he lost his Egyptian family and he was cast to as a slave, and then he goes into find God, and then he believes and goes before Pharaoh and leads the people out. And they some hard-headed, stiff-necked people. I mean, he had Dathan and Abiram going against him. I was like, man, Moses don't get in? You know, it was similar to my father, who was Jehovah's Witness, trying to tell me, you know, at that time I was growing up believing in the paradise. He was telling me Martin Luther King didn't get in. And I was like, he don't get in because he's not your father. I couldn't get with that. You know, I couldn't get with Moses not getting in. They get all the way to the door of the promised land, and Moses don't get, he had to go at a crag, and he didn't get to walk in. And I had a problem with God about that. And it wasn't until years of my development and growth later on that I began to understand. It really wasn't until I got into leadership positions myself that I began to understand, and that's why the question that I sent to us today was leadership. Question, what is the role of a leader? When we look at Moses and Moses not getting in the promised land, there are two reasons now in my development now that stand out why, and I want to share them with you this morning. You may agree or disagree, but you have that right. The first reason that Moses didn't get in is that Moses was born differently than everyone else. Moses was not born a slave. Moses was born to be the servant of God. Moses was not born into servitude. Moses was born and his mother escaped and allowed him to get away for a minute and then went back. What I mean by escape? His mother went to the brook and escaped. She hid. And she put Moses in a basket and trusted in God. She had escaped in her own mentality. She trusted in God enough and put him in a brook. The rest of the women were in the same environment that Moses was in, the rest of the mothers. She had two other children. Why Moses? Because the king was going around at that time killing male babies because he was afraid they were going to overpopulate. The rest of the mothers were sitting there watching their children get slaughtered. But she said, no, there's something special about this child. And she went and put him in a basket and moved him and trusted, followed him down. And had Miriam follow the basket all the way into Egypt's land. She sent her daughter into strange territory, outside the bounds of slavery, to watch to make sure the child got away safe. She believed. So Moses was born into a strong belief system that was different from every other Israelite. Even though he was born an Israelite and a slave, he now was born into a belief system and took that belief system with him to Egypt, that inner belief system that was with him at birth. The point B on that not being born a slave, he didn't grow up as a slave. He grew up as a prince of Egypt. Moses grew up as a prince of Egypt, not as a commoner of Egypt. He wasn't a regular Egyptian that knew the ins and outs. He was a prince sitting next to Pharaoh. So Moses knew before God ever spoke to him that Egyptian mythology wasn't hitting on anything. He knew Janus and Jambres was fake before he even met God, because he was a prince of Egypt. He wasn't a commoner archer of Egypt, or a commoner, a craftsman of Egypt, or a common man of Egypt. He was the prince of Egypt. So he had privy to the secret council that Pharaoh had with his magic practicing priests to fool the Egyptians. So Moses already knew that it was magic that Janus and Jambres had. He already knew because of his relationship with Pharaoh. He even knew Pharaoh was fake. He knew the gods were made of stone and image and they was fake before he met God. He was born under certain circumstances that was different from every other Israelite. He was born with a mother with strength. He was born free. He was raised up in a community that allowed him to be free. So when Moses finally ran away to meet God, he already knew, something internally in him knew, that Egypt was already fake. The second reason why Moses didn't get in is no other, after he met God, the scripture said the bush had been rumbling for years. Nobody had dared step up on the mountain. Moses, because of his way he was brought up, knew that there had to be something else. And so he went up to meet that God. When he went up to meet that God, Moses was by himself. No other Israelite, no other Egyptian saw the handwriting on the Ten Commandments. No other Egyptian spoke to God but Moses. No other Israelite spoke to God but Moses. Moses was the only one knew that the God was real. Moses was the only one who saw God's hand write the tablets out. So he knew without a shadow of a doubt that the God was real. The Israelites, when they saw the Red Sea parting, well, they could have believed it was a God, but hell, they had seen Janus and Jambres' magic tractors and tricks. They had seen Egyptian tricks. So when Dathan and Abiram started murmuring, there was reason for the murmuring to be there, because the Israelites, all the Egyptians, were not whole crafted like Moses was. They didn't have the condition of training and the condition of environment, the condition of birth like Moses. Moses was completely different because God had already seen in him leadership and was going to make him a leader. Now, before I get to Moses' problem, let's deal with us. Most of us that are in leadership, and I'm talking to those of us that have leadership skills, those of us that have qualities, those of us that want the best for our people, those of us that have been tapped and chosen to be in a certain number, I'm talking to us. We are born different. We are born with a different character. We are born with a different set of environment. And I can just look at myself. I grew up in the hood, but I wasn't born into the hood. I was born with a mother and father who had a different structure. Born with a mother and father who instilled Bible in me at an early age. My Friday nights were not consumed with spade parties and alcohol and weed smoking. My father wasn't a man that ran from house to house, woman to woman. He raised his family and showed me what a real man should look like. My brother was not a person that was in jail every other weekend. No, he wasn't, because he was raised like me and was raised in the house of my father. Many of you that I'm talking to were raised the same way. Even though you may have been raised in the hood, you had a certain condition, a certain upbringing. You had a certain mama that would pop you when you needed to be popped. You had one of those mamas like Moses that believed something in you higher than the environment around you. Many of you were born in similar circumstances. You were raised differently. Even though you were raised in the hood, your house was clean. Your mother knitted. Your mother sewed. Your father went to work every day. And even if you didn't have a father, your mother taught you how to be the father, how to cut grass, how to change your carburetor. Or you had a man in another neighborhood that showed you what a 3/16 inch wrench was. Many of you that I'm talking to this morning were born in the same conditions that Moses was born, that made you the leader. Just like Moses had that experience when he went and talked to God, many of you that I'm talking to that are chosen in that number have had a talk with God. Some of us have had actual experiences with God. We don't share them publicly. You don't share yours publicly, else you'd be called a nut. But many of you I'm talking to have had that conversation when God had talked to you in your sleep and told you it's going to be better. Many of you have had experiences that you've watched God take you from the hell, from the shores of hell, from death itself, from crack, from cocaine, from alcohol. And you've watched God change your life and made you a better person. Many of you that I'm talking to have actually been there at death's door and been brought back from death's door. You've actually seen God's hand in your life. You've seen the hand at work. You've seen it work. So you don't believe in a mystery God. You believe in a real God based on your experience, just like Moses believed in a real God and knew the sea would part because he saw God's hand move. He was in the mountain one-on-one by himself. He knew the mountain couldn't be talking to him. It wasn't spooky. He knew that was a real God talking to him. He know rocks don't talk. You know rocks don't talk. You know the water don't talk, but you was walking on the water one day and you heard God's voice. Clear as I'm talking to you right now. Tell you what to do, and it changed your life around. Many of you that I'm talking to right now today had that same spirit. And had that same experience. So now, why didn't Moses get into the promised land? Moses didn't get into the promised land because he got upset with the people. Moses didn't get in the promised land because he got upset with Janet, with Dathan and Abiram. All along, he's doing for the people. And Dathan and Abiram, here they go. As soon as he get one thing done, Dathan and Abiram run behind him. You know Moses think he's God himself. You know Moses leading you down the wrong path. You know Moses got that wife over there that, you know, she ain't really Israeli. You know Moses, you know, he gave her his sister and his brother. Look at the positions he gave them. That was Dathan and Abiram. Every time Moses do one thing good, they come right behind him, throwing rocks and thumbtacks in his way. Nathan and Abiram. Dathan and Abiram. That's all he heard. What Dathan said, what Abiram said, where Dathan said this, and eventually Moses got frustrated. The people sitting there then came across the Red Sea. He then went before Pharaoh, put his life in Pharaoh's hand, kill me. Well, he could do that because he knew God could save him. He then heard the people's murmuring and complaining all the way. Then finally one morning Moses said, "Damn it, I'm tired. You done woke me up on the wrong side of the bed this morning asking me for some damn water. Y'all thirsty again? Didn't you just get water yesterday?" And he was mad. He was tired. And he took his staff and said, "Is it by my hand that I should give you water?" He got frustrated with the people. For one instance, Moses was thin-skinned. And that's what happens to us sometimes. We get thin-skinned. We thin-skinned it when it comes to our people. We thin-skinned it when it comes to the criticism that comes with leadership. We thin-skinned it when we look at the condition of our people. Look at the way they live. Look at the way they ride. Look at they don't give a damn. I don't give a damn about them. We get thin-skinned it, and we forget all the mercies that God has given us. We forget all the advantages because we forget we're not one of them. I'm talking to leadership today. We forget we know more than they know. We forget we had a mama that taught us the scripture. We forget we had Mr. Johnson that gave us the 3/16 inch with the long rich socket. We forget our environment, our condition, our upbringing was different from that of the people. So therefore, we have to have the patience and passion and belief in the people, and the understanding to go save the people. We can't get thin-skinned with the people. The people don't know. They dumb as hell. They've been raised by a wicked slave master who wants to keep them in servitude and bondage. They don't know. They don't know they crazy as hell. They don't know. They have the slightest idea, the slightest clue. But us, we, those of us who have been touched to be in the number, we know better. We know there but for the grace of God go I. We know what we once were. And we know what we can be again. I don't know about you, but I don't want to just look at the promised land. I'm planning on getting in the promised land.
My teacher, the Honorable Luther Farrakhan, always told me you have a backup somewhere. I always keep that hip pocket sermon in your pocket. It always comes to handy. We had a few minutes. I had to take a break. You all are listening to No Covers on Blog Talk Radio. I'm grateful for you all that stayed in with us tonight. We had some difficulties, and I'm just honest because y'all know I keep it real on this radio station. I don't hide nothing about myself because I believe if you hide something coming to the people, it always comes to the light. I had to go see my probation officer, and it's funny that she happened to schedule my probation visit at 8 o'clock, knowing I know she checked my Facebook page and see that I got a Blog Talk Radio show at 8 o'clock. So she had to give me a text message that she was coming by at 8 o'clock. See, we all are part of the system, and I'm part of a captive system, too. That's why I'm so good at talking to brothers on the block, because I understand their condition. But I went out and did my little nightly tour and visit with her, and thanks to technology, I was able to clip on something I had up in storage about leadership. And I'm glad I tuned it in because looking at the airwaves, it seemed like you're stuck in there with me and that you kind of enjoyed it because you didn't pick off and you enjoyed that little brief program that we did about 6 months ago. And we have that recorded on Leadership 101. It's called Leadership 101. You can purchase that whole entire series at nocovers.org. You can go to nocovers.org, and as you go into our webpage, you look and see our tapes. You can order any of those tapes from this show or from the shows in the past. And real quickly in closing tonight, just want to give y'all some, you know, sometimes we come in here, last week we talked about the state of black males. Let me give you some positives to go away with tonight. Because as we wrap up this last 3 minutes of the night show and come back to Tuesday, I want you to think, well, oh, every time I tune into this show, that man just made me feel miserable because there's no hope. Yeah, it's hope. See, the problem is I see, I'm going to give it to you plain, the condition of black males, and then I'm going to show you the hope. The hope is in yourself and what you can do. It's a gold mine right now for the black male that's doing something. There's hope. The problem is this man is so wicked, he's so smooth, he's so cunning, he's so deceiving, he's moving our people in the other road, the wrong road, the two roads, one to the right, one to the left. He's moving them into the left road so fast that we sometimes we don't see the hope. The hope is sitting right there in front of us. All we got to do is go move forward and clean up. The problem is the enticements are so much over there to do wrong. The enticements, but especially for black males, the enticements of behavior that we know to be wrong, behaviors that we know are detrimental to our health, behaviors that we know are detrimental to our family, behaviors that we know are detrimental to our status of employment. Those behaviors are sitting right there looking at us. And then the behaviors that are good for us look sometimes non-positive, and they don't look in a favorable light to us. But let me tell you. Let me be clear with you. I feel good in the morning when I wake up. I feel good trying to produce a good family structure. I feel good hanging out and socializing with my brothers who think and believe like I do. And I actually feel good, even though I get upset, like I just said in Leadership 101. Even though sometimes I get thin-skinned with some of my Negroes, some of my blacks, even so, I get sometimes things getting upset with some of the youth that I work with on a daily basis because sometimes they can drive you insane. I had a little man this morning in the office at school. We had been working with this boy and worked with this boy. And he was in the office today, and he said something to his mama, and Lord, I like to lost my job. It was all working in the school system would drive, ooh, all I could take, I wanted to just, I wanted to go up inside him and rip his heart out. He just, didn't know what to do. So I went to a whole different demeanor. I just got up out of the chair, and I went and stood it right up to his face. And I said, son, you almost just cost me my job. If you don't get up out that chair and go over there and apologize to your mama right now, I might just lose my job. And he, of course, he thought I was serious because that's what it's going to take with some of these young men. When you see a young man on the corner and you see him out there in the wrong, stop the car. He has never had anyone stop the car on him and go up to him that's not been a police officer. Stop the car. You see him in the wrong, they don't know no better. They've been raised by a wicked master who is, as we talked earlier in the show, the illusion. Illusion means to intellectually deceive. Go look it up. What's the definition of an illusion? Means to intellectually deceive. So they've been trapped by the illusion of success. They've been intellectually doped, intellectually deceived into believing that this is a real world. Those of us who look with the third eye, that eye in the middle, we call it the third eye, the one that sits right between the two eyeballs, that mental third eye, that one. We know that this world is fake. We know that this world is going out. America is going out. We talked last week, financial cliff. That's the first time you ever heard that word. You never have ever heard in the history of America. Go back and study all the history. When it comes to finance, you never heard America talk about a physical cliff, a cliff. Johnny rolled the car off the cliff. You're not expecting Johnny to come back alive. Johnny's dead. America was almost at her death's door because she was at a physical cliff. This country is going out, and she's trying to take us with. I was telling my wife, we were talking the other day, how do you have an epidemic of flu and everybody getting flu shots? We were talking this other night in a meeting. They're giving out flu shots, and the flu keep going up. They keep giving flu shots, and more people getting flu. Come on, people. How long does it take you to see don't take the shot? Just don't go get it. She wants to take us with her. She wants to continue to feed us her poison. third eye. We got to start thinking with that third eye. We got to start thinking with our mental mind. And all we have to do is start operating and moving as a people. And we got to follow good, strong leadership. See, I'm proud of my Islamic community, and I'm proud of my nationalist community. When I come on Facebook and I see the hundreds of pages and all the blog talk radio shows and all of the teleconferences going on, we are storming because there are those of us out here who do not want to go down with her. We don't want to go down. We see Babylon falling. We don't want to go down with them. So we're trying to get this message out as quickly as possible in every nook and cranny that we can, that there is a hope and there is a way out. And I would be remiss. I may get in trouble, but I would be remiss. God, well, how could I get in trouble? I would be remiss if I would sit on this airwave and don't tell you. Don't tell you about the love of one who is coming our midst today. I would be remiss if I would sit on this airways and act as if all the knowledge I've gotten is coming, all the words that are coming out of my mouth, all the things that are said on this airway that I just actually sat down in a chair and came up with them on my own. I would be remiss if I didn't tell you about my father, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. I would be remiss if I didn't tell you about my father, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I would be remiss if I didn't tell you about the one, the guy who came in person, Master Fawad Muhammad. See, I don't mind saying that on air. I don't mind telling you that we see because someone told us. I know a man who know a man who met a man who met God. I don't mind telling you that because I would be remiss. I wouldn't be in my state of mind if I came to this airways and didn't tell you that he's still alive, he's still here, he's still present. And he's in the world today to give us a proper training and proper direction. He's got a teaching that'll make us put the cigarettes down, a teaching that'll make us put the alcohol down, a teaching that'll make us get back into a strong family life. I would be remiss if I didn't tell you that, because that is how I got to be where I am strong. Yes, I had a father, but he took me but only so far. At 19, I left his house, and I had to go wander for something else. And I found that something else in a man and a tape. I remember this date in 1980. I was sitting in a record store, my record store, as a matter of fact, me and some other partners, and a guy ran across the street, and he said, I got it. I got something you've been looking for, and gave me that tape called God is Able. And I never forget that day because I heard the voice of someone, and you probably got someone in your life, the voice of that. Listen to that voice of reason. Listen to that voice in your community. And go out and do something and help build and change. We can beat this man. See, I don't want you to go away thinking, well, he got us whooped. He ain't got us whooped. See, David had a five who smooth bones. He didn't take much to whoop Goliath. He had the faith in God to go out and whoop Goliath. We can beat him at his own game. We just got to understand the game, and that's what No Covers is about. No Covers is about unlifting the game so you can see how to play the game to beat this man so we can bring in and usher in a new and better, brighter community in 2013 and beyond. I thank you for listening tonight. I hope you tune back in. Next week's show, hopefully we won't have these difficulties. I've got some guests coming on. If you ever want to be a part of the show, just email me and tell me you have some things you want to say. I'll bring you on. If you got some guests that you want to bring on to the show, you're welcome. And this show is paid for. Again, the show is paid for out of the pockets of ourselves. No Covers is a project. No Covers is a movement that we're raising the conscious. There are 3,400 some people on my Facebook page right now. I try to text message as many people as possible during the day. I send them messages about No Covers. I have mothers on No Covers that text me and ask me questions about their son. I have parents that call and we want to know about their son. The whole focus of No Covers. People say, well, what about the sister? There are plenty of sister stations I can direct you to that's out there. I don't know nothing about that. I know about being a black man. I know what it's like to be a black man in America in this state of captivity, and I know how to get free, and I know a man that has taught me how to get free. So I'm sharing that information. I'm sharing those classes. Purchase the book that's coming out next month. You can pre-order at nocovers.org. It is called No Covers Volume 1. The title is The Black Male. It is not only a book, but it is also a workbook. You can go to nocovers.org and sign up for that. You also can go to nocovers.org, and we have a mothers-only site and a father's-only site where you can ask questions. We got to start asking questions because we don't know all the answers, and I don't know all the answers. If you ask me a question I don't know the answer to, hey, I'm going to back call another brother who's going to call a brother who's going to call a brother. But we're going to find that answer for you, especially when it comes to rearing our sons. We got to know information from those, our elders, that in front of us, how do we raise our sons properly? And we got to study it because we're dealing with a new generation. We just can't jump into this thing like we know how to raise sons because we'll be making the same mistakes our fathers made. How do I know they made a mistake? Look at the condition of our community. It's easy to tell our fathers made a mistake. They didn't know what they were doing. They learned from their father who learned from their father who learned from the master. So, of course, we don't know how to properly raise sons. We don't know how to properly raise our children. That training has not been given to us yet. It's there, but we have to search and find out. So touch bases. Ask questions, brother to brother. Network with your brother. If you don't know, the art of no covers, no covers started formulating because of this. The goal was I wanted to know a brother in every state. And then I wanted to know a brother in every city. That was the goal of no covers. I want to be able to know a brother in every state of America, then I want to be able to personally know a brother in every city of America. That way, if I go anywhere in this dog-forgetting country, I will know somebody I can pick up the call who is my brother and go and be in contact with him and at least have one person I can join forces with to make a change in the world. Now, if each one of us did that, as black men of America, we would change the content of America overnight. Every brother, make it your goal to know a brother in one state. Then once you get the states, map out and find every brother and know a brother in one city. You can do that on Facebook. Don't use Facebook to talk about the basketball game last night and the sister that was in the club on Friday night and the brother that did this to the girl. No, use what they've given us in social media to take over their world. Think about it. A million black men knowing a million black men in every state, and then a million black men knowing at least one black man in every city. And we all knew each other back and forth like that. Think about the changes, the economic development, the condition of how our community would change overnight. Now, if we did that, and then the sisters on their side did the same thing, and then we cut up all this gossip and yip-yap and all that, we focus on knowing each other, focus on loving each other, focus on building with each other. Think about how fast we would be able to change the condition of our people in America. It would be like lightning speed that we would begin to grow and see development because the love would be so powerful. Because if I know 50 brothers in 50 states and I text message them in the morning and say, hey, bro, let's get up for prayer. And then I knew 50 brothers and a brother in every city and I text message them in the morning and say, yo, bro, let's get up for prayer. And I did that and Raheem did that. And then Malik did that. And then Daniel did that. And then Leroy did that. And we all did it. Look how fast we would change the condition of this country. See, it's ideas that change the world. Don't hold back on your ideas. Have the courage and the strength to go after your ideas, whatever it may be. Go after your ideas. And go after it with such a passion, with such a love. That idea would germinate itself into a reality. As I say in the beginning of No Covers, I close the night. A dream is only reality that caught you sleeping. This is No Covers on Blog Radio. Y'all have a blessed evening. I'll see you back here Tuesday night at 8 o'clock. Thank you for listening as we go out with my good friend, Mr.
That was rough.
You're running and you're running away. You're running and you're running away. You're running and you're running away. But you can't run away from yourself. crazy boy, let's talk down.